Welcome back to Retire Right. Retire Right is a podcast in Australia for anyone over the age of 50 heading towards retirement and wanting to get their retirement sorted. I'm Martin McGrath from Financial Edge Group, the host of the Retire Right podcast for today. On today's episode, we're joined by Anthony Fowler. Anthony is a financial advisor based at Financial Edge Group, and Financial Edge Group help people all around Australia over the age of 50 get their retirement sorted. On today's episode, we're talking about investing for grandkids, helping your kids, looking after the kids, whether it's their education for the future, making sure investments are set up, and part of passing on wealth to the next generation. There's a lot to cover. There's top questions that we get all the time. Anthony, let's jump into it.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
So Anthony, you're a financial advisor every day helping people get their retirement sorted. One of the questions we do get from time to time is, I want to help my kids, I want to help my grandkids. How do people get started? What things should they consider about looking after the next generation?
Look, it is a question and topic that I'm hearing more and more out there, especially with my clients. I understand that their children and the grandkids are facing a more uncertain future, cost of living pressures and so on. So they are looking at ways in which they can help. And, some of the studies I've seen more recently do indicate that, a large portion of the national wealth is with the older generations of 60 plus. I think the latest numbers I looked at were close to that 70%. So, it is understandable that, when they do hold that considerable portion of wealth, they do want to see their kids benefit from their own financial situation and ultimately, give them a bit of a helping hand.
I think that's important. There's lots of things that we can talk about today about helping kids pay off their mortgage sooner or various stages of life or a deposit for a home, that kind of thing. But today we're really going to delve into, so perhaps we're looking at someone listening who's in their 50s or 60s or 70s or older. Importantly, one of the concepts we talk about, I suppose, is that life vest. Make sure you've looked after your own retirements first. But there's lots of clients that we help with for different reasons. They've downsized, they've received inheritance, their financial situation is that it's likely that they'll have assets beyond their own needs and potentially be able to pass on some money to the next generation. So that we might actually do some different episodes on other ways to help maybe adult children, but on today's episode, we're really going to focus on helping grandkids or I suppose anyone under the age of 18. I think that's important. Some of the concepts we're going to talk about may still be relevant to just someone in their 30s listening to investing for their own kids. So I suppose just as a reference point, that's where a lot of our conversation and topics are going to focus. So leading into that, let's say someone has an amount of money to help with their grandchild. What generally kind of things do people do and what things could they consider about how to allocate those funds?
There are multiple ways to consider that option. Some of my clients have simply said, look, they want to provide a gift and that could simply just be a cash transfer at a point in time. There are numerous vehicles out there that allow people to put aside some money, whether it be simply putting money into a bank account, whether it be looking at a managed investment. But there's also another one which a lot of people haven't heard of, which is called an investment bond. So look, each of those has its merit based on the sort of time we're talking about and the different goals that each scenario will be dealing with. But ultimately, that's why you see an advisor like myself and we can decide which one's going to be the right fit for them.
Yeah, perfect. And let's talk about some of those structures and you've highlighted that there and we see it all the time. I've got a bank account set up for my grandchild and I put some money in there or Christmas I put some money in there. So that's often the most common one. Is that the best for everyone or are there any pros or cons of just having a simple bank account?
Look, bank accounts are great for a short-term purpose. We do get that nice set rate of return, which means that we're not subject to changing values and we know that we can go to the bank and grab that money out at short notice. But there is also something else to consider when it comes to investing. And if we are looking at more of a longer-term scenario, then there is potentially a significant opportunity cost there in just looking at a bank rate of return.
Yeah, and so let's try and use some examples here. Let's say I'm grandson was just born and you know, they're 2 months old or 2 weeks old or 2 minutes old, and I want to put some money to them. So I look at a bank account, I put $1,000 in there. You're right, that's ideally a pretty safe investment option in the short term. But that downside of if I want them to get that money at a later stage of life, and we'll talk about that more, different ages that might be relevant, but let's say that's in 20 years' time. What are some issues there that they, why that might not be the best option for the future?
Look, cash can be nice, and right now we are seeing rates that are a lot more attractive than they have been of late. But at the same time, we do need to consider the long-term impacts of inflation. Inflation, unfortunately, has been certainly more prevalent of late. The cost of living certainly hitting everyone's hip pocket. That also plays a role with investing. It affects the real return of those investments. So there are ways in which you can help counter that effect. And, you know, the simple solution there being to consider other assets. And you've probably heard of shares, you've heard of indirect property investments on share markets and so on. Generally speaking, if we look back through time, they've been more rewarding with their returns. And that's one way of helping insulate or offset the effects of inflation.
Yeah, I think that's important for us, particularly this is a long-term investment, and most investments in people's lives are long-term, even superannuation, but particularly if we are investing for decades or for longer, for a younger, investing on behalf of someone who's younger, that we put, even if it's $10,000 into that today, in 20 years' time when they receive that, yes, it might have grown a bit with interest, but the buying power of that is going to be substantially less. And that's where, for us, generally, cash might be something to keep a buffer there. But if we are really looking to invest this for long term, we would look at other asset classes as you're referring to. So can people buy shares or manage investments on behalf of a minor who's under the age of 18?
Yes, they can. They would go out there and set up an account through a relevant provider, and that would then be set up in the name of the grandparent, but generally with a designation for that individual grandchild.
And so that is obviously an option that they can go and buy 100 shares in a particular company, and or they could go and buy or set up a managed investment and set up something like that. And some of the pros and cons of a direct share versus other asset classes, what does that look like?
Shares are a good start. They certainly offer the ability for capital growth. They also, a lot of shares will provide a return to the investors in the form of a dividend, which is effectively that distribution of profits that they make each year. And overall, it does provide that long-term return that probably suits the objective for a lot of these scenarios. But when you want to add to it, it's not as simple, you know, especially if you've got a direct share ownership. A lot of the transactions will have to be done through a broker. And each time that occurs, you're then going to have to pay for that brokerage fee. So it can be quite an expensive scenario. Additionally, you do need to consider that, look, just buying into one or two shares does have its concentration risks. I would generally consider the potential of setting up something more diversified across a portfolio.
Yeah, I think that's important that shares are great in that respect, and maybe it's a set and forget. But the problem is, like you just highlighted there, if you want to put an extra $100 in on their birthday, you may lose $10, $20, $30 in brokerage. And there are some minimum parcels you need to buy on shares. So shares are an option, but it sounds like an improvement to perhaps just cash because of that protection bit. What about something like a managed investment? People may have heard of managed funds or something like that in their own name or behalf of that kid. Does that get around some of these issues?
Look, a managed investment does simplify things a little bit. So you've essentially got a platform that does all the reporting for you, and it also gives you a range of different investment options to choose from. And some of those investment options will be nice and simple because they're pre-mixed based on a preset allocation to assets. And that sort of scenario can be great in terms of, you know, okay, look, I've got a time frame of 10 years, so I do want to invest for a bit more capital growth. Generally, you can find a solution within that platform's investment list that will match up with that objective. And along the way, you'll get your reports. You'll be able to track it. These days, you also get the benefit of apps and so forth. So it is still quite transparent, and a lot of the hard work of managing it over time is taken care of for you.
And those generally, from my understanding, I'll get you to confirm, it's a bit easier to top up along the way that you might not pay the same level of brokerage fees?
Yeah, correct. I mean, look, the way they're set up is they're designed to do a lot of the administration for you, and they do offer features where you can set up a regular investment plan, which can be simply just debiting your bank account every month for a certain amount.
Yeah, so that sounds like that, again, is a slight improvement as we're going up the steps here of improvement. So from cash to shares, shares to perhaps a more managed investment. We're getting some diversification there, easier to manage along the way, ability to add and top up along the way much easier. But we know there's a big thing in the world and the government are referring to as tax. How does the tax on something like that work?
Look, one of the downsides of taking on either of those two options or even having cash is that any of those earnings generally assessable in the holder of that investment. So often that happens to be the grandparent. And, you know, one of the things that we don't like to look at as much as possible in retirement is tax. So unfortunately, depending on how much is there and ultimately what those earnings are year to year, that could potentially mean that that dreaded tax return unfortunately becomes a factor again.
Yeah, so it might be that the owner, like you're saying, this grandparent might have to pay some tax on that. Do kids have to do a tax return, or do kids get an amount of money that they do have to pay tax on or don't have to pay tax on?
Okay, the tax rate for a child is actually quite different. Most individuals as adults will get a tax-free threshold of $18,200 every year. For kids, that's actually quite different. It drops down to $416. So it's a much smaller margin that they can earn before they start paying tax.
It's a lot smaller than $18,000 for sure. And so if they earn up to $416, they pay no tax. And then if they earn above that, do they pay a little bit, or does that go up substantially?
It does go up substantially. They don't have that same bracket structure like we do. It jumps straight to the highest marginal tax rate.
Okay, so that seems like that may be a problem to plan for. So $416, let's just try and put some figures around this if we can. Let's say we have an investment that's earning 5%. If we've only got something in the name of a minor that's worth $1,000, 5% might be $50. So $50 is well below the $416. But let's add a zero. If someone has, say, $10,000 invested on behalf of the minor, and not everybody would, but if this is a long-term investment that's being added to by various family members, it can grow ideally over time, and $10,000 in 20 years' time may not be a lot of money. So you'd want it to probably potentially get there and higher. But 5% on $10,000 went out $500, which is above that $416. And perhaps that's the territory where we start to get into some more planning issues. So that 10,000 figure is something that potentially people may get to over time. So how does that come into your planning?
You're spot on. It is definitely something that needs to be considered, because we would certainly like to anticipate that these investments will grow over time. There is that benefit of starting young and seeing that grow year after year with compounding returns. So that figure you're talking about of 10,000, you'd like to think that's achievable, certainly within the first, you know, period of time. So essentially what we're looking at here is a desire to reduce that tax implication long term, and that's where it's important to plan early and make sure you've got the right vehicle for that situation.
Okay, so we've solved some things there. There's other assets out there that are going to grow. They're going to keep pace with inflation, but they may end up having some tax issues along the way. So surely there's something else that may be suitable. What other structures are there that people use? And you referred to something earlier. What does that look like?
One of the vehicles that we've identified, and I think certainly suits a lot of scenarios, is something called an investment bond. Investment bonds are now offered by multiple providers in Australia, and they do provide a certain structure. There are lots of benefits, or there are certain benefits around that can be quite attractive to this particular scenario.
Perfect. And we'll do a deep dive on that after the break. Just before then, so just coming back and summarising a little bit, a lot of people are in a position here to help their grandkids. Let's say that's the case. I'm 70, I've got some extra money, and I want to pass on some money to those grandkids. A lot of people are, I suppose, concerned about gifting tax or gifting or things like that. How does setting up something like this for a grandchild or a child, how does that impact some of their other retirement plans?
So, yeah, it is definitely important as something to consider in the overall scheme of things and what impact that might have on your own retirement plan.
You've clarified there the impact on Centrelink age pension for gifting. What about gifting tax? If I've got three grandchildren, I want to give them $1,000 each. Are they going to have to pay tax on that $1,000 when I gift that to them?
Yeah, I think there is a common misconception there that that people do believe that there is a tax involved. But in Australia, the answer is no, there is no tax.
Yeah, we're passing on money that's already been taxed. So effectively, there's no tax in that regard. Staying on tax, because it's an exciting topic, let's go back to that scenario. I bought $1,000 of shares for my grandson. And then at 18, it's grown to 6,000. So we haven't breached that 10,000 limit potentially we're talking about. And he sells that when he's 18 and he's already working. Does he have to pay tax on that 6,000 potentially if he sells it?
Yeah, I mean, if he's in those marginal tax brackets and that essentially is then added to his assessable income, then yeah, potentially there could be tax involved offloading that, essentially capital gains tax. So that could be a factor in the future.
Yeah, I guess that probably comes back to that future planning. It might seem like the right idea now and a nice idea now, but it's also what does that look like in the future that potentially are we setting up for a tax bill? Now, importantly, we're not going to pay any more tax than the money we've made, but that still might be $500 or $1,000 of tax is lost out of that, and potentially there's a better way. So we're going to have a quick break now. When we get back, we're going to do a deep dive on investment bonds. And there's lots of elements of that. There's the tax, there's the investment piece, there's the ownership, there's some of the features of all of that. And Anthony's going to join me after the break to discuss all of that.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to retireright.com.au, click get help, and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted retirement advisors. Our trusted retirement advisors work with clients remotely all over Australia, so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's retireright.com.au and click get help to arrange a complimentary discussion to see how they can help.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Great, we're back. Anthony Fowler from Financial Ed is joining us to talk about all things investing for your grandkids. We alluded to this attractive investment bond structure before the break. Anthony, can you give us a bit of an overview of what is an investment bond and perhaps how's the tax different to some of those things we just touched on?
One of the great benefits of an investment bond is it isn't taxed in your own personal name. So it allows you to have that vehicle that's separate to your own personal situation and obviously set aside for a dedicated purpose. When it comes to tax, it's important to consider that there are some benefits there, for especially if you're starting to earn more than that $45,000 a year, where you start moving up into those higher tax brackets. The bond is generally assessed at a 30% tax rate, similar to a corporate tax rate, and that for a lot of people can actually be quite attractive when it comes to growing wealth. So there are some other benefits to consider as well. We do look at the investment bond as a longer term vehicle for supporting grandkids in the future. And when you do actually get to the point where you've held that the bond for at least 10 years, then one of the great benefits of this product or structure is that it's no longer subject to any further tax, whether that be ongoing earnings or profits. And say, for example, the grandchild hits that age where you've said, look, you're happy for them to have that money, they can sell that portfolio down and not be subject to any capital gains tax.
Wow, so that seems very different to what we just touched on with those shares before the break. So just confirming and break that down a little bit. So maybe let's go back to the start. So does the same $416 limit we spoke about, does that apply to the investment bond?
Look, the answer to that is no. You're essentially internally taxed on the bond, so you're not subject to those same personal or, in this case, minor tax rates.
So there's no limit on that. We spoke about that kind of if you're earning too much above 416, you might end up paying a higher amount of tax. But in this case, whether you've got 2,000 in that investment bond or 20,000 or 200,000, you're not restricted by those kind of same tax limits on the earnings?
You've got the same tax rate across the board, which is that 30% tax rate. I mean, there are opportunities within the fund to actually have a setup with different investments. And some of those, for example, let's say it's an Australian share that might return some profits to you. You can still get that same benefit with franking credits as well, which is obviously internally looked after for reporting purposes.
Yeah, so yeah, confirming that 30% tax is the maximum tax rate, but with some of those franking credits you referred to, some of the bonds pay less and substantially less than that 30%, but generally that's what's referred to. So different tax rates or different structures for the earnings. We touched on capital gains there, so same concept. If I hold those shares in Minim over a period of time, I have to pay capital gains tax when I sell them. Let's separate this within the investment bond. If they've got shares and they hold that for a period of time, is the investment bonds paying tax on that, or do I have to pay tax on the money within the bond still?
Yeah, as I alluded to earlier, look, one of the great benefits of this structure is that you are not subject to any sort of personal reporting requirements. It's all handled internally, and when you do go to sell those shares or whatever the investment might be, as long as you've held it for that 10-year timeframe, then you're not going to be paying any further tax. But up until that 10 years, yes, look, there are still internal tax implications, and that will all be handled by the administrator of the fund. And as I said earlier, it's also that one tax rate at 30%.
So let's just confirm that over 10 years you talk about. So when I put $10,000 into the investment bond when my grandchild is born, I've set that up that it's, and we'll talk about how it passes on to the next generation, but let's just say that they take that money out 20 years later, and because of great investment returns and a great advisor looking after it, it's grown from $10,000 to $30,000. There's some tax paid along the way, but that's paid by the bond. It's not paid by the grandparents, it's not paid by the child, it's not paid by the parent. But the grandchild then cashes in that $30,000. It's beyond that 10 years. So you're saying effectively they're not paying any tax at all on that withdrawal?
No tax at all.
It's a pretty nice tax rate. I think that's a nice structure to set up. So that's where I suppose we can see that tax structure is very different on that bond versus outside. Let's touch on, we spoke about inflation before, so let's talk about investments within investment bond. Is there only one investment bond option? Are they all different? How does that universe look?
A lot of these providers have gone to the lengths of building out their investment lists. So there are actually, similar to like managed investments, quite a range of investment options to choose from. So generally speaking, you can find one that would suit not only your appetite towards risk, but what you're trying to achieve long term.
So it could be in shares, it could be in cash, it could be in bonds, it could be in a variety of assets.
Yeah, correct. I mean, look, you can get as creative as you want usually. So whether it be buying into individual options designed to align with like a bond investment, or whether it's something where you want to have international share exposure, they generally have those options available to you. But if you want something simple and you want something that's just, okay, look, I'm a balanced investor, they've got a solution for that as well, where they look after the asset allocation for you, the investment's managed on your behalf. So it's nice and simple, kind of like that whole set and forget sort of structure.
Yeah, perfect. And that's why I think that's good versus just, say, an individual stock, and obviously from the tax benefits different to a managed fund. Are the investments set forever? If I set it up at a certain age, am I locked in for that, or can that be managed or changed along the way?
The answer is yes, you can certainly switch. It's simple as just looking through the investment menu, deciding what's going to be more appropriate. Let's say, for example, you're getting close to that age of 18 where you might have said that, look, that grandchild's able to access the money. It is quite simple to say, look, I'm prepared now to, I want to downgrade and have more of a preservation focus on the investment. You'd certainly be able to find a more conservative option there on the menu.
Perfect. And you referred to something there as vesting, and I think that's important, I suppose, to talk about the ownership of these structures. So if I've set that up for my two-year-old or my grandson who's 2 years old, is he in control of that? Does he get the mail? Does he log on the app and change the options? Or how does that structure work from an ownership point of view?
There's flexibility in the way that can be established. You generally have either the grandparent or maybe a parent there as the owner, and you can then nominate the child as the individual beneficiary.
Perfect. So it seems it's important that when you get that set up, you need to nominate who the owner is, who the beneficiary is, who the investment options are. You mentioned set and forget before. We touched on, I suppose, contributions. If I set up this bond with $1,000 or $2,000 to start with, can I add any more money along the way, or do I pay brokerage every time? What does that look like?
Look, you can add money along the way, and there are some slightly different rules there when it comes to doing so. So rather than setting up like a regular savings plan like you would on a managed investment, you can set up a regular direct debit with certain providers, but there are some stipulations around how much can be put in each year. So there is a rule that says, look, you can't put any more than 125% in compared to the previous year. So let's say you've put $1,000 in 1 year, you wouldn't be able to put any more than $1,250 the following year. If you do, then unfortunately what it does is it essentially resets that 10-year rule. So you're pushing that tax benefit further down the line.
So if I set up the same amount every month over 10 years, is that all right?
Yeah, definitely. And the same benefits with a managed investment. You get that compounding growth over time. So the more you add to it, you know, that snowball effect, you know, you'd certainly get that that nice growth over the, you know, let's say it's 10 years.
So what you're referring to with 125 as an example is I put $1,000 in initially, I put $100 in a month, and we talked about this 10-year thing. So I set it up when the newborn, so when they're 10 years old, effectively it turns in that tax-free element. But let's say in year nine, a grandparent passed away or there was a downsize or an inheritance and someone wants to go and put an extra $10,000 into that bond, and for the last few years they've only been putting in $1,000 or $1,200, I suppose two parts of that question is, can they still do that and what does that implicate?
Yeah, I think the answer is yes, you can do it, but there are going to be likely to be some significant implications there. The issue there is that if it is more than that 125% compared to the year before, which it sounds like it would be, then you are resetting that 10-year rule. So the benefit of being able to sell in the future and not have any further tax obligations or even potentially continue to grow the investment after 10 years, it will still be, you know, you'd be pushing the can down the road as far as what tax could be paid on that investment.
Perfect. That's a good summary. So you can still put that money in, but it means that tax-free status of withdrawals is pushed out to the age of 19, whereas they were pretty close to it. So in that case, is there a strategy you would suggest to someone who's doing that?
Look, for somebody who is in that situation, depending on how long we're still investing for, let's say it's still that at least 10 years, then I would probably just consider setting up a separate bond.
Yeah, so in that case, they may have a bond that's already about to be tax-free, but the other bond, the 10 years starts from that. So people can still have two bonds and be the beneficiary on two separate bonds?
Yeah, they're just you will unfortunately have the downside of the additional reporting, so you'd have two separate accounts. But correct, yeah, you can have two separate structures there.
Perfect. So let's stay on this and let's talk about withdrawals. We're talking about setting this up for somebody who's young and maybe setting it up so they can't access it to a certain age down the track. But what happens if along the way grandparent situation changes or the child situation changes? Can you access any of this money or is it locked up for that whole period of time?
You can access it. The downside of that for traditional investment bonds is that you will be still subject to the full rate of tax, and that generally gets taxed at your marginal tax rate. But you do get the benefit of having paid that 30%. So similar to the idea of like a share where you get a franking credit, do get that 30% that offset.
So you might have to pay some tax on withdrawals if you're withdrawing them within 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's certainly not an ideal scenario. I wouldn't look at recommending this type of product for somebody who's not going in for the shorter term. But yes, unfortunately, if you are withdrawing with that term, it's still possible, but you are subject to losing one of the primary benefits around the structure.
And those withdrawals, does have to be shutting the whole thing down? Can you withdraw a little amount? Can you withdraw it on a regular basis? How do those withdrawals work?
With your traditional bond, you generally would have to, you could take an amount out and no, you don't have to shut it down, but you wouldn't generally be able to set up a regular withdrawal.
Yeah, I agree. So if your intention was to only invest it for a couple of years, you often wouldn't do it. There still might be some exceptions if it's a really large amount and you don't want to pay a high level of tax in your own name. But the intention generally is it's a longer-term investment vehicle. As you mentioned, you get the most bang for your buck if it's over 10 years. But there might be particular cases where people need to withdraw funds sooner. What situations do you often see with that?
I think one of the common scenarios that I've come across, and it's certainly more prevalent these days, is when we look at the cost of education, is potentially to help with the cost of education. I mean, grandparents are becoming aware of what that commitment looks like, and they want to see their grandkids getting that access to a good education. So there are scenarios in place where there is an actual variation on the bond that's available that's called an education bond. And that particular bond is very much aligned with that objective. It's designed as something that does allow access to the money through the term, not just after 10 years. So rather than the idea of, okay, look, I want to give them a head start in life at a future age when they're a young adult, this is something where you can actually help along the way. And as long as there is an education purpose attached to it, like, you know, it can be an extracurricular, it can be, you know, their ongoing tuition and so on, you can get access to some of that capital to help pay for that.
And the withdrawals on those, from my understanding, is slightly different to what we've touched on. The tax implications aren't as significant, or there's this particular way that the formula is calculated, and we may not want to bore everyone with the detail behind that, but can you just touch on how or why that might be taxed a little bit differently?
Yes. Look, the idea is that you're generally accessing the capital that's invested. So when you do so, you're not paying any further tax. But there is also the ability to tap into some of the earnings. And as we mentioned earlier, there is a $416 tax-free threshold that each child is eligible for. So the idea here is that if you are taking out some of the earnings, then you'll essentially be able to get up to that $416 tax-free return to you. And then additionally, because there's been a 30% tax paid within the bond, that amount's actually refunded back into the bond. So the actual net outcome is actually improved.
So you could withdraw $1,000 for a school education purpose, not pay a lot of personal tax on that, and then the value of the bond, does that still go down by $1,000?
It doesn't go down by the $1,000. You're actually finding that the net amount is $700, because the $300 is actually returned back into the investment.
Yeah, great. So you're effectively getting the $1,000 and the value of your investment's only gone down by $700. So it's a 30% uplift on that. Just clarifying something on there, as you spoke, and important for people listening, you talked about the capital. So can you explain what you talked about there, if you're taking money out, the earnings versus the capital?
Yeah, okay. So within the bond, you're still going to be able to invest that money. So again, you've got quite an extensive list to choose from, and those earnings are going to be separated out. So look, if you're going to look at the reporting over time, the way that bond works is you'll have a separate amount for the earnings and a separate amount for the capital. So you always know which portion is which. But the idea behind it, and where obviously you have access to that money, is that capital portion to continue funding those education expenses. And each year you get access to that $416. So it resets every financial year. So it is something that is important to consider to try and get the maximum benefit of the bond. But again, that's something where, you know, if you have access to advice, we can continue to help you administer that along the way.
So it sounds like the bond on your behalf is tracking over time how much money you put into it versus how much it's grown. So you may put $10,000 into it, but it's worth $20,000 today. The bond manager will separate that between, you've got 10,000 of your own money that's in here, that's referred to as your capital, and 10,000 of the earnings, and that's what it's made over that period of time.
Correct.
That education piece is really important, and I agree with you. There's lots of clients we speak to that that's a focus for them, that the cost of raising kids and teenagers is very expensive, and so the grandparents may like to help out. Does every investment bond get that extra education piece and tax benefit?
No, the answer is no. There are obviously a few different providers out there and different variations on this product. But yeah, you have to be quite careful in making sure you choose the right one. So the education bond is the one that has that access to the capital on the way and that particular tax benefit as well. But additionally, it does still have a lot of the features of the traditional bond. So if in the future you decide that you do still have an amount left over that you'd like to help out a grandchild, whether it be buying a car, whether it be potentially a deposit on an apartment or home, you can certainly do so with that as well and set that future age where that money's accessible.
So you don't need a separate one for the education versus their future needs. So you could put a significant amount, and we help clients with this, $50,000 or $100,000 in for a grandchild. But if they don't need all that for education purposes, that money's not lost.
It's quite flexible, although you are obviously assigned to that 10-year rule and the 125 and so on. You do have the best of both worlds. So you can actually still access the money along the way to help cover off education costs. And that doesn't have to be a private school. It doesn't, you know, there's still, we all know that there's a lot of extracurricular costs out there. You're obviously with public schooling, you're still asked to contribute along the way. So all those expenses qualify for the ability to access that money. And in the future, let's say you set a vesting age of 18 again, that money then becomes available to the young adult.
Yeah, so if they don't end up going to university or whatever, or TAFE or post-school education, they may not need all that money. That potentially still pass on to them at that vesting date.
Correct.
Let's talk about that, I suppose, what we'd refer to as estate planning element. So I've set it up. What happens if the grandparents die? What happens in that regard, and how and when that money is transferred to that next generation?
When it comes to a bond, it's actually similar to the idea of super. The effectively the rules are that it's a non-estate asset, so it doesn't form part of your will. So you do have the ability to set up a separate nomination on the bond. And the good thing about that is that generally when the bond owner passes away and there's a nomination in place, that money can actually be distributed to the beneficiary completely tax-free.
So that's important. So a grandparent set that up, they've set it up for their newborn grandchild, they've set it up at a different vesting age, and we won't cover all that today, but it can be 18, it can be older, and there's different bonds that offer different features. But let's say, unfortunately, the grandparent doesn't live to the point that that grandchild receives that money, and the grandchild's 12 or 13 when the grandparent passes away. Does that mean that this 12-year-old has just got $50,000 in their wallet and they can go and spend that?
Look, no. The good thing is there are multiple ways in which that situation can be managed. The vesting age still remains, so that bond stays invested until the desired age is achieved. But you can also have, which I think is an important feature, a bond guardian, and that guardian essentially would then step in to help oversee the product and make sure it's being used for the right purpose later on. You know, a great example of that is, look, you might have your son or daughter as the bond guardian that continue to oversee that and make sure that your wishes are reflected in the future.
I think that's important to plan for in terms of that. What about in terms of a relationship breakdown? If this has been set up again for a grandchild, but unfortunately their children, their son and daughter-in-law separate, does that get brought into that asset pool that it's part of their wealth, or how is that assessed?
The answer is no. It doesn't end up forming part of the marital distribution of assets. And the reason why is because it's still treated as the owner being the grandparent. It's not part of that family pool of assets. So it can't be challenged for the purpose of any sort of family separation and settlement.
And going back to where we started, that's why there's different ways to help versus if this was just a physical gift to the children and it was put against their mortgage, then often that can be part of that relationship asset pool, whereas if it's really intended for the grandchildren, having this completely separate structure protects that money for its intended purpose and need. Anthony, in terms of what happens when the beneficiary turns that age, it's set up when they get 18, they've turned 18, what happens now?
Effectively, the recipient or the grandchild has the option. They can take the money, and there may be a specific wish behind it. So if that is the case, then hopefully, you know, they'll obviously align with the original intention from the grandparent. But just say, for example, they're in a situation where they're not quite ready to buy a house or apartment or whatever the situation might be. They've got that flexibility of continuing the bond. So if they want to go back to the bond provider and say, look, okay, I want to keep this money invested. The only downside of that, though, is that the rules do apply again. So that 10-year rule does reset. Or if you're in a situation where that money is not needed, then ultimately that bond can be continued. It is important to consider the overall situation at the time, because we are aware that the bond's still going to be internally taxed at that 30% rate. So you do need to compare that to their own income situation. But yeah, I mean, look, the flexibility is there to continue the bond. And in the future, if they decide, look, they need to withdraw it, say 5 years time, they can actually still go back to the provider and say, look, I'm ready to cash this out tax-free.
And that might be where you touched on before about the different investment options. What the investment option is for a 2-year-old might be different to a 22-year-old.
Yeah, look, it's important to revisit that investment strategy just to make sure it continues to be suitable for the sort of timeframes we're dealing with. But it may also be the fact that now this child has got a different appetite in terms of how they wish to invest. So, you know, there is always that customization within the portfolio that's available to the investor, and that child might have a different perception of what that is.
Perfectly. I think hopefully that's answered some questions from many of our listeners about can they help children, how should they help children, things to consider. And we're definitely not affiliated with an investment bond or anything like that, but it does seem that that's a pretty flexible structure that achieves many of the things that our clients or the listeners may be looking for.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. Look, it can be quite an attractive vehicle for this scenario. It does offer some flexibility, especially with that education bond, which can still be utilised along the way. But at the same time, you know, if you want to invest for that the future and you've got a specific desire to see that grandkid when they're a bit more mature access the money for, you know, buying a house or something like that, then, you know, it's a great vehicle because it's got that 10-year rule where you can access that without any further capital gains. It's got some protection there for both marriage breakdowns as well as, you know, from being able to ensure that money goes to the right recipient, but also, you know, the ability to have somebody else manage it if anything were to happen to the original owner. Certainly something we're happy to talk about here at Financial Edge Group, or, you know, go and see your advisor. I think they can certainly provide some more information around how you might access this particular bond.
Thank you, Anthony. That's been great. You've been listening to Retire Right. If you want to find out more, as Anthony mentioned, you can reach out and have a chat with him at Financial Edge Group or jump on the Facebook page or the website of Retire Right. And thanks for listening.
We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we live and work and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to this podcast. This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination, and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Symo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorised representatives of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Tsinis.
Kayla Tsinis. I'm Kayla Tsinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.